You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The Final Furlong podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote. Think all place pots are the same? Think again. 10% bigger dividends when you bet direct with Tote Plus at tote.co.uk.
Yep, Emmett Kennedy with you alongside Lee McKenzie of TalkSport 2. It's been so long, Lee, since we spoke.
Yep, at least, what should we say, 30 minutes, maybe slightly more.
maybe 40. TalkSport 2 racing coverage Wednesday through Saturday. Lee McKenzie in the hot seat. Check it out. Am I in the hot seat next week or is it 2 weeks' time?
We're going to definitely get you back into the hot seat. Turn up the temperature a bit as well for you, Emmett. We'll have you on next week, we hope, as a pundit, tipping winner after winner, as usual, and giving a thoughtful and insightful analysis into the races as well.
50 quid on the way for that. Thanks, mate. Thank you.
You do a sterling job too on the days when you're in the hot seat as well. On days when I find it just a little bit too hot and have to vacate it for a few days. Yeah.
No, nobody does it quite lightly, McKenzie, and you can hear him Wednesdays, as I said, through Saturdays, TalkSport 2. It's essential listening from 1 p.m. We had a lot of crack today and some big name guests as well, as per usual. We are looking ahead to the live television action on the weekend. The headline act, of course, is the North. Who will be the King of the North? As we continue to do old Game of Thrones references for the Air Gull Cup. But we'll start with the 155, the Virgin Bet Doonside Cup Stakes listed race. I almost went Scottish and then just halfway through it went, no, don't do it. Ground is going to be good to firm by the sounds of things. That was the end of Adeyeb being challenging here. Any prospect of him turning up sort of ended with that current going. So we are left with One Elcano, Yukon Glen, who of course would be a very popular winner up there, Maidani, and Juan Montaban, having his second start for David O'Mara. One Elcano, just off air briefly, the two of us were discussing Kevin Ryan's charge, and I think we're both in the same camp here, that he's going to take all the beating.
Yeah, I think this is a kind of race which I would always start off with the official ratings of the horse, and it gives me a direct route to which ones are most likely to win. And obviously, I think there are two that stand out here, Yukon Glen and Juan Elcano. The big difference is that Juan Elcano went for a Group 1 last time out, the Jumbot International, and okay, he was well beaten in that, but at least he was aimed at it. That was the important thing, that trainer Kevin Ryan thought he was worth a go in it. Whereas I couldn't imagine, lovable horse though he is, Yukon Glen ever running against the likes of Mishriff and his trainer Jim Goldie, expecting him to even finish in the first three, let alone actually win. I am the greatest admirer of Yukon Glen, and he has surprised me time after time. Here he is at the age of eight, still winning. I think you could say he's actually better than ever, and his versatility is as good as his ability. You know, we know he's a very good horse, but it's also winning over a wide range of distances as well, which I never thought he was capable of. But I think in here, Juan Elcano, out of his depth last time out, back to a more manageable kind of race. And I think the others, although they may be very good handicappers, and I do mean very good handicaps, you've got horses in there rated over 100, and that makes them extremely good horses. But as you know, hard horses to win with very often, humping an enormous weight in a top handicap or trying to win in this sort of company here. So I'm going to go for Juan Elcano. I think this is absolutely the right opportunity for him here.
Yeah, I completely and totally agree with you. I think he's just... Look, I love Youkan Glenn as well, but I think he's the best horse in the race, and he's just been transformed this season by that wind operation. And he's been a completely different proposition since we saw him, particularly at Royal Ascot when he beat Patrick Sarsfield. You know, that was I know Patrick Sarsfield was absolutely thrashed in the Irish Champion Stakes, but a bit like Youkan Glenn, there's nothing of Mishriff or St. Mark's Basilica's class in this race. And Juan Elcano will take the world of beating, I think, in the 155 at Ayr. So we're both in agreement there. We switch tracks. We go to Newbury for the 215. We're Cadam for Shadwell Estate, which is going to be significantly reduced. The breaking news that we covered on TalkSport 2 today, as we record on Thursday. So Shadwell's investment and the amount of horses that they have in training is all going to be scaled down drastically. They will be selling horses in training. They will be taking a long, hard look at the two-year-olds that they have and deciding what to do with them. It looks as though a lot of those are going to be sold as well. And it looks as though they'll be taking a long hard look at their stallion roster too and the breeding interests. So that's going to be a devastating blow. We kind of knew it was coming because you could see it with the way they shut down operations in South Africa and Australia. It was impossible to imagine that they wouldn't do anything at all in the UK and Ireland, but it is going to be a devastating blow for both jurisdictions, and the French particularly as well will really feel this. And ironically, there was a Shadwell winner in France today at Paris Longchamp, but those famous colours, we hopefully will still see them, and hopefully they'll still have a good presence, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be anywhere near the significance that it has been over the years. What do you make of...
Worrying for Jim Crowley as well, the jockey, of course, because he's first jockey to them in Britain, and Dane O'Neill is their second jockey. And between them, they've dovetailed beautifully. You know, Dane occasionally gets the opportunity in a big race, but I think Jim has really clicked in the last couple of years. They've actually had a good last two or three years, and they've had some really lovely horses. They got some too by Yeed, for example. I mean, he's something else, isn't he, going on to next year. And it'd be interesting to see whether they decide to keep these potentially very valuable horses, just reduce the number of them, or whether they think that some of these are going to be worth so much money, you might as well sell them while you can. It'd be shocking, wouldn't it, to think that those famous colours of the late Sheikh Hamdan El Maktoum won't be around at all in future. It doesn't sound like that's the plan at the moment, but how many of them will they keep? That's... we're in, I think, a changing world, and we're in a changing racing world too. So I'm hoping that the colours do stick around and we continue to see them. And it does sound as if that is the plan, but let's see where we go from here.
Yeah, it was the phrase substantial number of horses to be sold as part of restructuring. That was the thing that worried me most. You know, at least it's not the same as their statement when they said disbanding operations. You know, they're not gone, but it's worrying times though, and it's just worrying times for trainers and for jockeys. I think Jim Crowley will be fine. Dane, what position he falls into within the ranks now will probably be a different story. But is he going to have like a retainership to be second jockey? Maybe. Maybe they'll still need a second jockey. We have to wait and see how many of these horses they're going to sell. But Are they going to be active at the sales? Probably not.
And of course, whether or not they need a second jockey depends on just how many clashing meetings there are. Of course, because if Jim's at one, then Dane may be at the other. There is talk, as you know, this week of there being more Saturday meetings next year.
Because that's what we need.
Indeed. Not enough of those around at the moment, are there? Lots of Super Saturdays. We should get very excited about that, I'm sure. We've already got Super Saturday, so we can have Special Saturday and Sensational Saturday and any other words beginning with S that go in a alliteration kind of way with the word Saturday. And also, if they improve the quality of Sunday racing, which is also being talked about, is it possible that you might have Jim might have to go to France to ride there, and that would give Dane a chance in this country? But I just can't see that there are going to be enough horses around for them to need to do that on a regular basis. We were talking to Dane O'Neill actually yesterday on completely coincidentally on Wednesday on Talksport right, 2 yeah. and talking about his career in these famous colours, and he's done a very a steady job. He's Mr. Dependable. He's there, and he's been happy to accept the number two job there, first of all behind Paul Hannigan. And then Jim Crowder came in. I suppose Dane might have thought that with Paul Hannigan gone, he might have got the number one job, but Jim came in above him. But he's never complained, and he's had some excellent rides, and he's a very valuable member of the team. But will he still be there next year? If they reduce their numbers in the way that has been suggested, it may be that they don't need a second jockey. They might still have Jim there. And then choose from the pool of all the other jockeys around if they need a second one.
I suppose Qatar Racing have only had 72 runners in the UK this season. Obviously, Oisin Murphy is their contracted jockey, but they still have the deal with young Kieran Fallon. So maybe they would do something like that with Dane then, that they will want to, they wouldn't want to risk it and they want to keep him, but it's just there's a part of me is slightly concerned and a little bit worried about that with how all this is going to play out. But it's a more worrying time for, I think, whatever about Dane and I'm sure Jim Crowley will be fine, and I think Dane will probably be fine as well. But there are trainers who are going to be thinking, damn, like we were full sure we'd be having all those training fees next season. And now we're not. So it's going to be an interesting time. And does somebody step in? Does someone come from the clouds and step in? Because this has happened before. We've had new investors suddenly get involved in the sport. But we'll have to wait and see how it all pans out. What do you make of the Dubai International Airport World Trophy Stakes, which Shadwell Estate have the favourite for in Qadim?
I found this race really hard. I think there are a lot of horses in here that are very well matched. And if you look at their form figures, you'll see they're not, even though they're high-class horses, group three, they're not particularly significantly what I... Oh, well, there's a horse called Significantly in the Race, actually, which is... funnily enough, I had a bit of a soft spot for him, didn't I, in the Beverly Bullet a few weeks back the podcast. And I did this whole spiel about how he was going to flash out and either make the running or chase the leader, and that would be good because he'd be out of trouble. And then the stalls opened in the race itself, and he was left five lengths at the start, and that was that. So it was a brilliant piece of theory by me. But unfortunately, on the day, it was all over after about the first 3 seconds. Having said that, I did think Significantly will win a decent race sometime when he comes out of the stall sensibly. But he is, looking back through his form, he does miss the start every now and then. So he's always a bit of a risk. And in any case, he may not be good enough to win this anyway. Tis Marvelous. He actually won that race in the end. I think he's better with an uphill finish, though, Emmett. So you look, he's very good at Ascot, for example, and Beverly that day. A stiff finish really suits his Marvelous. And at Newbury, of course, it's perfectly flat. And I think Kingsley would have a bit of a chance for the Queen if he comes back to some kind of form. Slightly disappointing last time. And Hurricane Ivor, winner of the Portland last week, wasn't it? So getting up the last stride. I mean, is he really what I would call a really speedy five furlong horse and a flat five furlongs? Is that what Hurricane Ivor does best. So I'm going to go for Moss Gill. And he's got blinkers on for the first time. I'm never particularly enamoured by headgear. And first time, I know it can work brilliantly, but equally, I just don't like to see it. But on his day, he's actually a seriously good sprinter. I remember three lengths behind Battash in one of his races. So I know Battash was a bit unpredictable himself. But any horse that gets within three lengths of Battash when that horse was at his peak is good enough to be worth considering. So I'm going to go for Moss Gill. I am taking a bit of a chance there because although he runs well most of the time, every now and then he puts in an absolute stinker. But I think he's good enough to win this at his best.
I would agree that at his best, he's good enough to win this race. We'll have to see what kind of effect the first 10 blinkers have on him. I'm actually with the Queen here. I'm with Kings Lynn. For Oisin Murphy and Andrew Balding. And it's interesting that William Buick is on board significantly for Carl Burke, because Buick is obviously banging in the winners and trying to chase down. What did we work it out today as? It's an eight gap now between him and Oisin.
I think it's down to seven at the time when we're talking now. And it's looking potentially interesting because there's no doubt that William has said to his agent, I want as many winners as possible because I'd like to be champion jockey. He did actually say memorably a couple of months ago. For him, it's everything. You think of all the races, the massive races that he's won around the world. You would think for a jockey, winning the Derby, for example, would be as good as you could possibly get. But he said, no, champion jockey is the number one thing that can happen to me. And with a month of the season left, and he's within touching distance of Oisin. And I do think actually he may even give up opportunities to ride biggish race winners. I'm not talking about Godolphin, obviously, because he has to ride for Charlie Appleby if the opportunity comes up. But I think he may even give up certain opportunities to ride decent horses in terms of quantity for the rest of the season, which would be quite remarkable, wouldn't it? He wants that championship.
Well, I know of a jockey who, this won't be hard to work out, who came back to the UK and the bookings he was getting weren't up to standard, shall we say. And he was saying, what the hell? And the agent said, Buick's going for the trainer's title. Buick's going for the jockey's championship. What do you expect? So
there you go.
That was last season. And he's actually, there's two things to say. He's clipped it down to six. So he banged in another winner today. So it's six now between him and Oisin. And Charlie has sent horses to Canada for the Group 1s over the weekend. It's the Woodbine International at the weekend. And there's four Group 1 races. And he ain't running in any of them. He's staying in the UK. So he's letting Frankie Dettori go over and potentially be doing flying dismounts for the Canadians, which I'm sure, of course, they'll absolutely love. But it's interesting times. And he's got a couple of short price favourites tomorrow as well. So
he wants Friday. That title. But I would also say it's a two-way thing, because I think his trainer, agent is getting him on as many horses that have got a sporting chance of victory as he possibly can. But equally, I do think in the last couple of years, William has improved so much now. He can be considered a top-class jockey. I mean, you may say, oh, come on, John Gosden gave him a job a decade ago, and then he got the job at Godolphin. He was a top-class jockey then. But I think in the last 2 years, he has become exceptional now, and he will enhance the chance of any horse that he gets on as well. So not only has he got his agent looking for horses that could win, he will actually improve their chance of winning just because he's been booked for them. And he is a jockey now that I look, particularly for trainers that he wouldn't normally ride for. If I see him jocked up, and I'm talking about proper horses, you know, I don't think you're going to see him on some old warrior from the past who's slogging around the country tracks and doing its best, but is going to finish 5 minutes behind everything else. You're not going to see William Buick. It's not a case of just get me any horse I'll ride anything in the hope that that some of them might just win by accident. William Buick is going to be riding horses with a good chance, horses of quality, but he will actually make their chance even better. So that's a great combination.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it applies also to our good friend Oisin Murphy, because he's not going to stop. And he wants it as well. He desperately wants to be champion jockey again. So, we'll see how all of this pans out. And, of course, the man that he is partnering Kingsling for is Andrew Balding, and he wants to be champion trainer. And Charlie Appleby very much wants to be champion trainer as well. So
it's all looking good.
Oh, we're set for some interesting talking points throughout the rest of the season. There's no doubt about that. But, their mounts are going to be fascinating. And the fact that they're both at Newbury just means it'll be pretty interesting on Saturday. Right, we'll go back to Ayr. This is the Virgin Bet Ayr Silver Cup, where Blackrod currently heads the betting with Billy Garrity on board from Michael Dodds, claiming three, very valuable £3 as well. Hector Crouch for Clive Cox on Royal Scimitar, 8-1, quite like him. As a spoiler alert, a Magical Spirit, Kevin Stott and Kevin Ryan, tens, and then you're looking at Bergerac, a winner last time out for Kevin Ryan, well-placed, and he's also got Rathbone for Oisin McSweeney. Little bit of a issue for the commentator there. Good luck, Simon Holt, as they've got the exact same colours. Silver Cup, so this is the consolation race for the big race of the day. Who do you think wins it?
I feel the love for Blackrod. I understand that. Improving rapidly. Young horse, could be even better than he's shown so far. He's on a rapid upward curve. I get that. He's not the sort of horse that I look for in a race like this, because I like a battle-hardened, regular performer in these big field six furlong handicaps. So the Wokingham, Stewards Cup, Ayr Gold Cup, Ayr Silver Cup, whatever. So Blackrod, yes, I understand that entirely, but I'm going to look elsewhere. And I actually found this race quite hard because there wasn't anything that really ticked every box for me. I'm looking for a horse that is happy in a field of 20 odd and has done it before. Also, a horse that is at its best on fast ground. Now, good to firm at the time of speaking. It may be good by the time the race gets underway, but I don't think we're expecting a huge amount of rain. There might be a little bit of rain in the area, but I don't think we're looking for a deluge here. So I don't think it's going to be any worse than good. And there were other horses that have either been out of form, too high in the weights, haven't shown enough in the type of race that this is. I always think, yeah, okay, from a handicapping point of view, it may have won a five-runner race at Kempton, but what has that got to do with the Ayr Silver Cup? It's a completely different thing. And I know that people get to vote as a handicap, Marks, and it's a good framework for deciding which horses are well in at the weights, but I'd far rather come from the other direction and say which horses are suited to this kind of test and which ones are in reasonably good form. I do understand that sometimes horses lose their form. They're now well handicapped, and so get in now. But I do like to have seen that they're still doing something. You know, if the last form was 18 months ago, it doesn't matter how well handicapped it is, I'm not going to be tipping it. So I've come down, and it might be a slightly curious one for you. Total Commitment, who is trained by Simon Hodgson.
Now, 20-1.
He took over the stable run by Peter Hedger, who often used to have Peter's still there, very much part of the setup, but he stood down. Simon took over. He was his assistant trainer for a number of years. And Total Commitment is exactly the sort of horse that Peter Hedger would have run in a race like this. And I'm sure he's there behind the scenes talking to Simon about exactly what he would have done. And although a lot of his form is actually on the all weather, he ran really well to finish fourth last time out. He's happy in a big field. I think ideally I would have liked good to soft ground, and I wouldn't normally make an exception, but it does look to me as if he's been laid out for this. He's quite high in the weights, but William Carver will take £3 off. I don't normally say, because there's an apprentice on board, £3 off, therefore it's £3 lower than it's actually carrying, because there's a reason why the apprentice is taking off £3, and it may well be that in a field of this size that you'd rather have an experienced jockey and not have the £3 off. But William's good, actually. I used to point to points. I used to see William riding a lot in pony races before the point to points take place. They're often two or three pony races. And a few years ago, when he was about 14 or 15 at the time, and I used to think whenever William Carver was like, this kid is different class from everybody else in this pony race. He was destined to be a good jockey. And so I'm going to stick with him. I'm delighted to see he's done so well. He's ridden 50 winners now. And I think he'll continue to improve. I don't think he's quite the finished article yet, but he will continue to improve. So I'm going to go for total commitment at a big price. And he's drawn 24, which I think may be a help. It may be better to be middle to stand side. But having said that, I'm never completely convinced by the draw in the air, silver and gold cup until I've actually seen the race. And of course, by then it's too late, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing. People will be saying that, why aren't you asking about the draw? When it comes to air, it's like literally up in the air, but obviously the different word. We've had winners from 4, 23, 8, 26, 4, 20, 8, 21. Come on, you know. There's no point. There's no point in debating about the draw right now.
And sometimes it's dangerous to see how they go in, say, the Silver Cup and say, oh, well, that's how it's going to work out in the Gold Cup, because then an hour later and suddenly it's completely swapped round again. So I think, and I did say this a few weeks back in another similar race, that sometimes you just have to accept if you try working on the basis of the draw, then you're going to make things too complicated. So do it on the basis of whether you think the horse is the right horse to win the race. And if it turns out that all the pace is on the other side and it gets beaten, you just have to take the hit, don't you? That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. We're back to Newbury, where the ground there is good to soft. This time we are looking at the 250. It's the Dubai Duty Free Legacy Cup Stakes, formerly the Ark Trial. I don't think any horse in recent years has come out of this to go and actually run any sort of big race to go and win the Arc. So it's, they just decided to then remove the Arc Trial and then put it in brackets as formally the Arc Trial. So Alassi is a very short price favorite here, and you can see why. Again, Shadwell Estate maybe having a winner. This is his first run after a gelding operation. Jim Crowley, of course, on board, and narrow defeats to Pile Driver in the Coronation Cup, narrow defeat to the, unfortunately, had to be retired, I'm pretty sure, Saron Priestley, which is a terrible shame, because that was a horse of real promise and one of Lucy Russell Hughes' favorite horses as well. But if he's back to anything like that kind of form, and if the gelding operation has had the effect, well, then Alassi wins here, surely.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought that Alassi in the Coronation Cup you mentioned, it's another Group One, isn't it? You can't knock it. And when he was second in that race there, I thought this horse is destined to win a big race before too long. He went to Newmarket on the July course next time out. I thought he could not be beaten that day. I thought he went off 2-1 on. And Saron Priestley just battled on too well for him. And I thought it was the ground was probably a bit too fast for Alassi. So it's a bit of a shock he's been gelded. I wonder if the poor horse was protesting. Hang about, it was a fast ground. It was a fast ground. It wasn't anything else.
No.
It wasn't lack of information.
I have a future. It's done. No!
I think it's a bit of a shock to find out that he's had the clip now, because I thought he could make a very nice stallion in due course. Now, obviously, those who are close to him know a lot more than I do, and particularly his owners, who would be looking for future stars in the stallion world. So they wouldn't have done it without a reason. But if he's anything close to what he did at Epsom, he should win this. No problem.
Yeah, I think that sums that up. Nice and simple, really. I would be stunned were he to be beaten. Peas and carrots all over the place, if that's the case. The 305 at Ayr. Again, this is live on ITV and, of course, Racing TV as well. Geraldine's will be settling Headmistress, who is unbeaten in Ireland, with wins coming at Down Royal. where she won very nicely on debut with a £5 claimer on board. Colin Keane then took over at the Curra, and this was a listed race and got the better of William McCreary horse and Dunnock O'Brien's Orinoco River, who hasn't really shot the lights out as was expected. But Headmistress is unbeaten in two. Jar Lines having a fantastic time of things. He had a brilliant Irish Champions weekend. He's a rare enough visitor to the UK these days. He doesn't make a visit over unless he feels he's going to come away with a winner. And I suspect that this horse is indeed going to be a winner for him. In fact, he's only had the one runner in the UK this year, and that was Akido, who I think ran at Royal Ascot. It was a York. He ran him in York. He even skipped Royal Ascot Jarlines. So when he sends one over, he means business, and I think Headmistress will take this.
Yeah, so do I. And of course, he memorably won the Ebor, didn't he, a couple of years ago as well. So he's, you know, as you say, he's not somebody who sends horses over en masse to run in the hope that they might be good enough to win a race as good as this one. It's a Group 3. I think he's targeted the race, hasn't he? Okay, a form is over 5 furlongs, not 6, but he clearly knows that 6 furlongs, will suit her even better than 5. I'm looking at the others in the race, and I'm just thinking, yeah, they're good. They've set a good standard. And you've got those that around the time of Royal Ascot, you were thinking, yeah, they could go on to be pretty high-class horses later in the season, but they've plateaued a lot of those. They've come up to that level, but they haven't gone on any more since. This could be a good opportunity for one of those, but I prefer to look for an improver, and that is the obvious one, isn't it? And so Headmistress for me, relatively unexposed, just 2 races, 2 victories, and I would prefer that against all the horses whose form, good though it is, read like, for example, 3-9-2-1-7-6.
Yeah.
1-1 is the sort of form that you need to win a race like this, because they always say, don't they, Emmett, until a horse has been beaten, you don't know how good it is.
Exactly. And particularly when you're coming into the race in the back of a listed victory at the Curra as well. Beautifully bred, by the way. Profitable out of a street cry mare. Hala Hala Athamani, I might have got that right, was the horse that I thought was also interesting for Kevin Ryan. He bolted up on debut. That was at Carlisle. And I would be interested in him. He's on my...
He's in another one who hasn't been beaten. Okay, it's only 1 race, but again, 1 race, 1 win.
Yeah.
Brish's Bar is the same thing for David O'Mara. 1 race, 1 win. I wonder, have we moved on from that mid-season form now? And we're looking towards next year. So horses that haven't been raced too often, they've been held back, and now they're about to show what they can do, rather than the early horses that were really good 2 or 3 months ago. They were doing fine. And it's still there in their official rating, isn't it? You see horses here, these two-year-olds, they're rated in the 90s. But can they improve enough on that to win a Group 3 as good as this one against unexposed horses who have got a lot more to give? That was my thinking.
Yeah, I'd be in agreement with you. And I think the fact that this fella, Hala Hala Athamani, came out in August, and Headmistress came out in late July, and again in August. I think some of the early season 2-year-olds are going to be in for a bit of a fright, and I think we've seen some in recent days, particularly in Ireland, but also in the UK with Godolphin. We're starting to see some back-end juveniles come out that, you know, all of it, like Point Lonsdale's done for the season. And I think Aidan O'Brien's not going to be losing too much sleep over that, because I think he's got a few exciting ones coming through. So we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. But we'll move on to the 3:25 at Newbury. And this is Aromatic heading the betting for, or Aramac, even if I decided to not just add a T there, dyslexia. It's a great thing.
Can't have too much tea, Emmett. You can't have too much tea.
Nice save. William Haggis and Tom Marquardt teaming up again. Huey Morrison and David Probert have King of Clubs. That's the horse that I like for Huey Morrison, 11-2. The aforementioned Godolphin, Saeed Bin Saroor, and Ray Dawson with Mohassis is 6-1. And then Charlie Fellows and Callum Shepherd have got a horse whose name I will let professional commentator Lee McKenzie pronounce.
Shall I go for Injazati?
There you go. That's why
today's word, mystery word, is Injazati.
Solve it now, folks. And that's why you're paid the big bucks. Solve the 325 for me, my good man.
I didn't say it was right. It was my interpretation of all those letters joined together. I didn't say it was the correct pronunciation.
Just go with it, man. It's right. It's right. McKenzie said it. It's right. Go with it. You cracked it. What do you reckon?
No, I'm going to be a bit boring here. And I'm going to say Aramac or Aramake, however you want to say it, Tom Marquant, William Haggis. It's a horse on an upward curve. Now, what I would normally do in a race like this, if it goes off too short, then I would be looking for a horse to finish in the first three. And maybe a horse like Strait of Hormuz might do it for me there, because I think he runs some very good races. He's not completely reliable, but he does catch my eye every now and then. But I'm going to go. I just couldn't find the right horse to do that for me. I like Sam Cook, actually, who came back to form at York last summer. I tell you what, I don't think I've ever seen a horse dripping with sweat more than Sam Cook in the parade ring. Wow. At the Ebor meeting. And I actually said to his trainer, Ray Becker, I said, does he always sweat as much as this as he was walking around? And 5 minutes later, as he came in triumphantly into the winner's enclosure, I realised, because it wasn't a warm day, temperature was about 20 degrees and it was overcast. So I realised that Sam Cook is one of those horses. Sweating in the paddock, forget it. It's just what he does. He's back higher in the weights now. I thought that day, because he'd been gradually slipping down the weights, he was getting back towards the winner's enclosure. And that's exactly what it proved, until he put me off by looking like that in the parade ring beforehand. But he has now gone back up in the weights, and it'll be a bit more difficult this time. But he is a horse in form, and he's a decent sort of mile and a quarter horse on his day. But I'm going to go with Aramake, and the kind of horse, you know, William Haggis knows where to place these horses, and I'll be hoping that he improves enough to beat some pretty battle-hardened, trusty handicappers here. But I always think I'm taking a bit of a chance of more on potential than on actual ability. But he has, you know, he's won a couple of races now well, and I'm going to give him a chance.
Yeah, but he's 4-1. So why wouldn't you? It's not like you're talking about a 6-4 shot. So I completely agree with you. And I can, you know, he does look like his horse is on an upward curve. Quick question for you about one who's making his comeback. We haven't seen him for 457 days, and that's King Leonidas, who obviously was trained by John Gosden, now trains in partnership with his son Thady, as they made it official. And James Doyle booked for the ride as well. He cost an absolute fortune. And we saw a John Gosden horse making his... So King Leonidas is coming back as a four-year-old. That in itself, to me, is intriguing. And the fact that they've decided to come for the free handicap, which is, you know, it's worth a few quid, and it's been won by some decent horses over the years, but
yes, he's intriguing.
Yeah,
I would just say that so far he hasn't run in a race like this, and therefore I can't compare that with this one and say that's what he does well. And so I think he might do it again. But what was he ran pretty well in the Jersey last year at Royal Ascot. He'd won a race at Newmarket before that. Mm. He's now running over a mile and a quarter, though, for the first time up in Trip. And there were just too many question marks against him. But the fact that John and Thady Gosden have decided to bring him back in this race here at Newbury, a mile and 2 furlong handicap, means that they think that that's exactly what he will be good at. And maybe what he would have been doing if he hadn't had that break. You know, just because he ran over 7 furlongs and a mile last year doesn't mean to say that he wouldn't have been over a mile and a quarter by the end of the season. So, yeah, I think he adds a touch of spice to this race. But I don't like the 457 days absence either.
Yeah, that's
I don't think he'll be unfit, but I just don't like it when a horse has been off for that long.
That's the real thing about this horse is why has he been off the track for the length of time that he has been? What does it mean in terms of his training? Like, is he just one of these horses who... incredibly difficult to get spot on. But I think it's intriguing that they've decided to keep him in training and bring him back as a four-year-old. Not as though the owner stuck for a few quid. You know, that, all that Dubai oil money. It's there to be spent. But a Kingman out of a Galileo mare, he'll at least be worth watching on his comeback. First run since Royal Ascot last year, as Lee was alluding to, and that was his first run in the year as well. So
he's still an entire horse. He's a colt still, so he hasn't been gelded. So further down the line, are they thinking, yeah, we can still make a real racehorse out of this one?
Yeah, they obviously think they can send him to Jarley at some point. So we'll see how that plays out. But for you, I think Aramac is a very good shout, King of Clubs, and King Leonidas for the combination exacta, maybe, possibly. If you want to play it,
it's not a. Yes, yeah. Well, it makes sense to me. It's not a race from a predicting point of view that fills me with huge confidence. And I have sort of taken a bit of a punt here with the Haggis horse, something I don't normally do, because I do actually like to see evidence that a horse is good enough to win a particular kind of race. I don't mind if it's come down the handicap, it's been a bit out of form, and now it's coming back up the handicap or whatever. But this is a new challenge for Aramac, and I'm hoping that he'll be up to it. So the confidence levels, I won't say they're low, but they're not maximum in this race.
All right.
But I think he'll go extremely well. I'd be surprised. William Haggis, I think, is one of the best places of a horse in the country. You know, he never tilts at windmills. He doesn't stick a horse in a race. You know, if he puts a horse, for example, in a group race, it's good enough to run in a group race.
Absolutely.
He's not a trainer who just stick it in there and hope for the best. So the fact that he's put Aramac in this race in a very competitive mile and a quarter handicap at Newbury suggests that he thinks it's good enough to put up a very good show and could even win.
Guy's an absolute genius. And speaking of wanting to see evidence, if there's a race, maybe you're at work and maybe you're doing what Lee and I are doing, working from one another's homes. It's not that I'm in Lee's home and he's in mine. You know, Lee's in his home and I'm in mine.
I didn't think your sofa was very comfortable, Emmett. So can you get some new cushions?
How dare you? That's one of the most comfortable sofas in the world. I'll have you, you know. I'll have you know. I'm always the recliner chair, man. The ability to live stream any race you want would be pretty useful for you. And that's exactly what Tote give you. You can live stream any race in the UK or Ireland without having to place a bet, just as long as you've deposited money into your account once. That's fair, incredibly fair, particularly when Tote also have the Tote Guarantee, which also applies to Irish and UK race meetings. It's where the Tote win bet will be settled at the higher of the Tote dividend or the starting price, as regulated by the Starting Price Regulatory Commission, might I add. Terms and conditions apply, and batteries are not included. And Tote Plus as well. If you are deciding to place a bet on that race that you're going to live stream, well then Tote Plus, you got to be with Tote, because you're getting 10% on top of your winnings. Tote Plus bets are settled at a value which is 10% bigger than your standard Tote dividend. There you go. We're giving you the gravy. Lee McKenzie is coming on here to the Final Furlong podcast to give you the weekend gravy, and Tote will add to it with 10% in addition to who's going to win the Virgin Bet Air Gold Cup Handicap 340 live on ITV and on Racing TV. And this, my friend, is a proper head scratcher. Or is it? Or is it? So it's wide open betting. Tell us who you've come down on.
All right. So this is not who I've come down on, but here's our old mate Summerhand. We love him, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
We're tipping up and Stewards Cup at Glorious Goodwood. I thought he ran well there. He came from behind. He didn't get a run in the last furlong and a half of the race, and he ran extremely well just out of the first 10 or 11, which doesn't sound great, but I thought he was a real eye catcher there. He went on to win next time at a big price in a hot race. They put him in the Group One last time, didn't they? He's not really a Group One horse, but I think it was worth having a go because he is a grand campaigner. He's carrying big weight of 10 stone one. I wouldn't rule him out again, but I'm going to look
at
elsewhere.
Was it a bit too soon, though, mate?
Yeah, I wondered. Yeah, it might have been. I think he's the sort of horse, and remember that he beat Oxted early in the year, who is a Group One horse.
Yeah.
And I think on his day, you know, he is the kind of horse that's capable of carrying massive weights in really hot handicaps like this. And we should never underestimate him, even when he's against the very best. So well done, somehow, for another great season at the age of seven. But I'm going to go against you this time. I do know that Ed Walker, I spoke to him earlier today, a great ambassador. He really loves. He thinks this horse is exceptional. He was a bit worried about the draw when I spoke to him, though. A stall one on the far rail. He said he would prefer to have been elsewhere on the track. But as we were saying earlier, with the draw, I think the best time to assess the draw is after the race is over, isn't it? Which is not going to be any help to us at all. But I did note that he did sound a little bit down about having stall one. I think his other horse, Popmaster, is another one who's got potential to win a race like this. Holly Doyle on board, blinker for the first time. But I'm going to go right to the bottom, nearly to the bottom, Ostilio. Billy Garrity riding for Paul Midgley, who, of course, he's a specialist sprint trainer, isn't he? And nearly all of his horses run over five and six furlongs. And that Beverly Bullet race that we talked about a few weeks back, Emmett. And I tell you what, this horse put up a really eye-catching performance there. Slowly out of the stalls, he tried to work his way through up the far rail, and he was really motoring at the finish. Now, okay, different kind of race. We're six furlongs today, and he hasn't actually got an enormous track record over six furlongs, but he has run over seven fine. And that run at Beverly last time out on the sprint course over five furlongs there, I think that was a perfect prep run for the Gold Cup at Ayr. And if you haven't seen that race, it is worth looking at how he runs. He makes up a lot of ground in the closing stages. Uphill finish at Beverly, of course. No doubt that he would stay six furlongs because he's done seven in the past. And if you go back to his previous race, he ran in one of these big fields at York, and I thought he ran pretty well there too to finish ninth. I think today, when we get to Saturday, today will be the day, and I think you can expect a big run from Ostilio. So he's going to be my selection there.
I think Ostilio, on his last three runs, has been, well, this will be his third run, has been tipped on the Final Furlong podcast because he was put up at a wild price and was backed into 12s and then before the off went all the way back out to 40s. In the end, he was beaten 3 1/4 lengths, but he finished ninth. And he was very well backed in the Beverly Bullet as well after being put up on the show again where he finished fourth, but it was fourth of 11. Yay. So Ostilio, you always won. You don't really, Ostilio. You don't. Also intriguing that he's still a full horse by new approach out of Mark of Esteem. I wouldn't disagree at all. I think he's got a massive chance. I also think that this is the kind of race where you want to be, okay, the 7-2 favorite took this race last year, but 28-1, 28-1, 11-1, 10-1, 20-1, 16-1 winners in the last few years. You want to be looking for something that's going to be a bit of value. And with that in mind, I've got a couple. I've got two, to be completely exact about it. In fact, I'm going to talk myself out of one. I need to cop on to myself. I need to cop on and not be placing any. No, I'm going to do it. Kevin Ryan's Hey Jonesy. One more chance. One more chance, Hey Jonesy. But Snazzy Jazzy is the one I like. At a, I think he's about 20s. I think he should be able to get a little bit bigger than that. Yeah, drawn in the middle. He's in 14. Laura Pearson claims 3, and that's very valuable. He's carrying 9 stone 4. And look, this is very, very open. He completely bombed out earlier in the season at Ascot on soft ground. But when he races on good, he was only 3 1/4 lengths behind Winter Power at a big price. 3 lengths off Tis Marvelous, 3 lengths behind Copper Knight at York. I know people might argue, was that not a good runner, or that Oisin Murphy said he shaped pretty well that day, actually. So I think Snazzy Jazzy is worth another go. And interestingly enough, he's still a full horse at the age of 6. Mm. So we're both going for the full horses. There's the exacta. Ostilio and Snazzy Jazzy, the full horses in the Air Gold Cup.
That's a big exacta. And your horse, Snazzy Jazzy, actually finished 2 places ahead of mine in that race at York that I was talking about.
That's right.
So they've got similar kind of recent form. I think Snazzy Jazzy actually won this race, didn't he, about 3 years ago?
Yeah.
And so he's got form on the course, but it was pretty soft that day. But I think he was on my shortlist, actually. I know his form figures are, they look uninspiring, but he's just the sort of horse to pop up at a decent price at a race like this. So I think he's one of the more likely ones. He's drawn in the middle, isn't he? Stall 14.
Yeah.
And which gives his jockey Laura Pearson options. And the fact that she's riding it and she's well worth her £3 claim, I think enhances his chance. So Snazzy Jazzy, yeah, he was in my 4 or 5. So I'm not going to disagree with you. And as for Hey Jonesy, yeah, it, surely one day he's going to pop up in another one of these. And I've been waiting a long time, but you don't win one of these and then not win another one sometime later in your career. It's just a case of when it's going to be, isn't it? And I think that they're too good, what I would call stick your neck out selections, and go for something that's not absolutely obvious on recent form, but when you look a bit further into it, you can see why they might do it. Yeah.
Yeah. He was only beaten 2 1/2 lengths by Rohan. I know he finished 6th at Ascot. His last 2 runs, he's bombed out at Pontefract. But again, then only beaten 5 lengths at Goodwood on the soft ground. And I think the better ground suits him. I think good ground suits Hey Jonesy.
I think, yeah, good ground. I agree with you. Mm. It is odd, though, that when he won the Wokingham last year, and okay, it was a very close finish, that and I was expecting him then to show up in similar races later on. This is last year. He went to the Stewards' Cup and then onto the Air Gold Cup after that, and just didn't feature at all.
Nope.
He's been beaten a long way. You know, he's right in the ruck in both of those races, and yet on the face of it, they're the same race as the Wokey. I mean, Ascot's got an uphill finish and Goodwood's sort of largely downhill and Ayers flat, but at the same time, I would have expected more. I suspect he's just one of those slightly unpredictable 6 furlong, high-class 6 furlong sprinters. You never quite know what to expect, but you can't win one of those races and have no ability. There must be potentially another race like that in him somewhere, mustn't there? Because while a good horse can run below par, not just once, but 5, 6, 7 times, a bad horse can't seriously run way above its level of ability to win a race at Royal Ascot. So, yeah, I'm waiting. Come on, Hey Jonesy, I'm waiting for you.
Come on, man.
I know that there is, after a while, you do run out of patience, don't you? And then, and of course, that's the moment when it finally wins, isn't it? The first day in 2.5 years, you haven't had a cheeky 5 or each way on it, and it bolts up in a 25-runner handicap.
Oh, if you could have seen my face on TalkSport last year when he won at Royal Ascot, as I would try to just keep cool and be like, yeah, what a performance. He's just beaten Summerhand. I mean, he's had the potential. While inside, I was going, oh my God! Absolutely killing me. Snazzy Jazzy, by the way, he took the Silver Cup a couple of years ago. But he's still my number one. He would be the one I'd be having the bigger bet on. In terms of potential future stars, well, Kevin Ryan is going to be involved in this one again as well. And a horse who has run very well against, a horse who was largely consistent all season until his last run, when he was extremely disappointing, Lusail. And Giza Sob is the horse in question, with James Doyle on board. But Dabab, I think, is the horse that most people will be talking about. Rab Havlin in for John and Teddy Gosden. Obviously, Frankie Dettori has gone to Canada. What's that all about? To ride for Godolphin. So Rab Havlin's having a great time of things this week. Gubas for Richard Hennen and Sean Levy, who's a horse that many people rate much higher than his form so far. I think the time from France last time out was quite good. Fearby for Edward Bethel and PJ McDonald. And then you're looking at the likes of Wings of War for Clive Cox, who we know from Lucy is a horse that Clive thinks the world of. And he was only just beaten at York in a meeting that we covered on TalkSport 2 by Ever Given, but was then subsequently beaten at Kempton as well. So your thoughts on the final race recovered, my friend?
Yeah, I do agree, Wings of War. And I thought he would run really well in that sales race at York that you mentioned. And he finished third. He was one of three that pulled a long way clear. Yeah. He ran an excellent race, but disappointing that he couldn't go on from there and win next time. I think the Mill Reef is a very hit-and-miss race. You know, every now and then it produces a really good horse. So we were talking about Ribchester, weren't we, on TalkSport 2 this week.
Race
won
gold.
The 2015 running. Yeah. Now, he was a seriously good multiple Group 1 winner in waiting. I remember when he finally made it to the lock-in. I've never been so certain the horse was going to win a race. And amazingly, I got that right for once because he,
of course he, did win the lock-in. You're Lee McKenzie.
And you know what it's like, Emmett, when you really fancy a horse and then it gets beaten. My job is also to analyse why it got beaten. And believe me, I've done a lot of analysing like that over the years.
We all have, mate. We all have.
So, and then Harry Angel, of course, won the lock-in the following year. Not the Lockinge, the Mill Reef the following year. And then he turned out to be an extremely good sprinter the following year. So it can produce milers, it can produce sprinters. But it's not reliable, I think, as a guide to next year. Sometimes you get horses that run and win the Mill Reef, and the next year they can be really disappointing. And I found this hard. I'm going to go with Gubbas, Richard Hannon, Sean Levy. I think on balance, he's probably just got the best form in the race that we've seen so far. He's not exactly the kind of horse that I would expect to be tipping in the Mill Reef, because I'd be looking more for a one that has run a couple of times, maybe running in some of the similar races that build up to this. I'm thinking of things like the Gimcrack, for example, where, funnily enough, Ribchester ran before he went on to the Mill Reef. But I've gone with Gubbas. He won the Newbury Super Sprint, didn't he, earlier in the summer?
Yeah.
And he's run pretty well in his two races since. So although I think he's not, for me, a typical type of horse that I would tip in the Mill Reef, I think his form is good enough to feature prominently, and I think he's got a sporting chance of winning it. So I'm going to go with him.
Okay. I am going to back Dabab. And part of the reason why I'm going to do this is because I really like Masekela. He's a horse that our good friend Oisin Murphy gave me for Royal Ascot. He was adamant he was going to run a big race. Thing is, I'd already spoken to Aidan O'Brien, and he was saying Point Lonsdale, this horse is working really well. Interesting that Point Lonsdale done for the season, as I was saying earlier on. So clearly Aidan's got something for the Fertum Futurity. John Dance, coming your way soon. You better be watching What If on Disney Plus, by the way, because if you're not, I'll be coming around. But the horse that Masekela beat when he subsequently won after finishing behind Dabab, Dabab was third, Masekela was second, and Native Trail won. This was the Superlative Stakes. And Masekela subsequently went on and beat Bayside Boy, who has come out and beaten would look to be the unbeatable Queen's horse, Reach for the Moon. And of course, Native Trail has gone on to pretty much frank the form by beating, in impressive style, by beating Aidan O'Brien's Point Lonsdale, the previously unbeaten Royal Ascot winner. So I can't get away from him. And look, I know he's a boring selection to go for because he's the 7-4 favorite for the race, but, oh, you can get 2-1. Oh, fill your boots. 2-1 at the Dabab. fill your boots. I really like him. I think he's got a big, big future ahead of him, and I hope that he can go and win the race. But I would greatly respect Gubas, and particularly based on some of the info from France that I got. Apparently, he'd run much better in Deauville than people were giving him credit for at the time, and yeah, I wouldn't be.
I don't think trainers take their young horses to Deauville without thinking that they are pretty good, because we know the quality of the racing there, don't we? And and I think when you go there, you know you're not just going to be taking on the Brits that have gone over and the Irish horses that have gone over. You're going to be taking on some of the best of the French as well. So, although actually in that race this year, there were rather a lot of British runners in that race.
Yeah.
We had Richard Fahey, Alan King, Richard Hannon had a couple, and the French horses were all, apart from the runner-up, were well back. But I think when a trainer takes a horse to Deauville, okay, it's a brilliant day out, and maybe they just want a day eating croissants in the square with the fountains for breakfast. Maybe that's just what the trainers want. But I do like to think it's because they think their horses have got a decent chance of winning in a high-class race. And I've been to Deauville many times in recent years, and it's a beautiful experience, but the quality of the racing is excellent as well.
It is, to be fair. No, I think the speed figure he put up that day was immensely impressive, apparently. So so I'm told by people who know these things, and on the official ratings, he's rated higher as well. So I wouldn't put anybody off Gubas, but for me, it'll be Dabab. I think he's got a lot of scope about him. He's a no-name never out of a Master Craftsman mare. And I think that the fact that they've waited for the Mill Reef with him is an interesting move from John and Teddy Gosden, who will be no doubt hatching a plan for this horse. And I think that plan may very well come off, but we'll see. Impressive on debut, ran into Berkshire Shadow at Ascot. Nothing wrong with being beaten by him. He's held the form up all season, winning at Goodwood and then running a fine race at York. And if you bump into Native Trail, who then goes on and wins the National Stakes, there's not a whole lot you can do about that, is there? What is your best bet of the weekend, my friend?
I'm going to go for Ostilio in the Air Gold Cup at 340. This time last year, you know, he was rated 108, and he's now down to 96. And I thought that run at Beverly last time out over a trip that is short of his best. I don't think he's the kind of horse that I would normally look for in a race like this, because I'm normally look for the ones that run in races like the Stewards' Cup and the Wokingham, and maybe in this race before. But that looked to me like the finishing touches were being put to Ostilio's challenge for the Air Gold Cup this year. And he's beautifully handicapped. He's ready to win. So Ostilio for me in the 340 at Air.
I absolutely love the bullishness. The bullishness from this man.
He only has the other 24 runners to beat, Emmett.
That's
all.
It's
as simple as that.
It's just 24 runners. What are you worried about? It's going to be fine. It's going to be so simple.
Can we revisit that around about 3:45 on Saturday and see whether it was that simple?
Well, if it is, if it does turn out to be that simple, then like there should be like a round of applause just should go up at every race course in the UK and Ireland. If you've managed to pull that one off, by the way, and it'll have to get a mention on Monday's show as well, with a trainer joining Kay Tracy and myself on Monday's show. So we should be having a bit of fun there. Have I bought myself enough time for the best bet? I'd actually would strongly advise people to be watching racing TV, or if you can go and the weather holds up, and it's a reasonably nice day in Kilkenny today. I've relocated from Cork to Kilkenny today. I'm very much looking forward to seeing Adonis run for Jessica Harrington, who is just on fire, literally. Send around the fire brigades to Jessica Harrington's place, because it's ridiculous how many winners she's sending in. And the Niarchos family, who are having a great time of things as well. Shane Foley on board. He runs in the 210 at Goran Park. he should have learned enough now to go and win, and his form ties in with Point Lonsdale as well. So I think that he'll be well worth seeing in the flesh for Jessica Harrington. And my best bet is boringly. Will it be boringly Dabab, or will I go? Will I go elsewhere? Will I?
If it wins, it won't be at all boring.
I'm going to say Headmistress then at threes. I think the Geraldine's 3-1 Headmistress, and right now you can get 2-1 about Dabab. So in that case, then you've got your patent. So the patent is Ostilio, Dabab, and Headmistress. There you go. Done. And dusted.
Simple as that. That's
Saturday sorted, and we'll see you in Dubai very soon. I will see you on the radio, which of course makes perfect sense next week, my friend, on TalkSport 2. And until then, pleasure as always, my friend. Thank you very much for joining us on the Final Four line.
Indeed, Emmett, it's been fun as ever it is, and just all has to complete. The perfect weekend now is for all of our horses to win. But somehow those perfect weekends don't come along very often, do they? But I think we picked some good ones there today, so I'm looking forward to seeing them run.
I'm looking forward to it as well. I think there's some decent horses there now. I think we've got some. I think we've got a good chance of getting the gravy poured. on Monday, we will be joined by Nico de Boinville and Mick Fitzgerald to pay tribute to the great Altior, and what a fantastic story that Mick Fitzgerald is taking Altior in as well. He and his wife Chloe will be looking after him for many years to come. A brilliant racehorse, retired this week by Nicky Henderson. So we'll chat to Nico and to Mick Fitzgerald about the great days on the track and about his retirement. And Kate Tracy is here then with the trainer. We're bringing a trainer on for the first time, as in it's this trainer's first appearance on the show. So I'm looking forward to that as we review the weekend's action and talk about some of the big stories in racing as well. Hopefully you can join us for that. Until Monday, enjoy yourself. Have a great weekend. We'll chat to you soon.
The Final Furlong Podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote. Think you can't get better value? Think again. 10% bigger dividends when you bet direct with Tote Plus at tote.co.uk.